Hi, this is Larry London, and welcome once again to Border Crossings on television. And joining me right now from a remote location in Dubai, we would like to welcome Connor Maynard to the Voice of America. Now, tell me, why are you in Dubai, first of all?
I'm actually in London now.
Oh, you're back in London.
I'm back in London. I got back literally 2 days ago, but I was in Dubai just for a vacation. It's the first time I've been abroad since 2019. So yeah, I kind of actually, funny enough, the last time I was away was in the States. I actually came back from Miami. I landed in London on Christmas Eve 2019. And then I was kind of umming and ahhing, like, because I lived in LA for about 3 years prior to that. And I was like, do I want to live in London? Do I want to live in LA? I wasn't sure. And then COVID came along and made the decision for me. So,
yeah. So why Dubai? Why would somebody choose to vacation in Dubai? You know, I've never been there. It's a beautiful place.
It's a lot of fun. There's so much to do. It's an interesting one, really, because it's a fairly like new city. So everything is kind of like state of the art, and you know, there's just so many cool things there to do. I feel like they definitely really took tourism into account when they kind of like designed the place, and it's just really, really fun. I have so much fun every time. I've been there a whole bunch of times. There's a bunch of shows there before. I'm actually going back later on this year for a show. So I always have a good time there. So I went with a couple of friends and we had a fun
Why
time.
Not? Why not? Connor Maynard is our guest, and he's a multi-platinum recording artist, a singer-songwriter, and a actor who has appeared on Broadway.
Yes.
And you were in Kinky Boots. Are you going to go back to Broadway? What was that like? I mean, being on Broadway.
I don't know. I mean, I massively enjoyed it. Like it was so much fun to do. And at first, I actually didn't want to do it at first. I just felt like it wasn't really like what I saw as like my aim or like my goal. At first, I was kind of umming and ahhing. I was like, I don't know if this is what I'm going to do. And then what did it for me was a personal phone call from Cyndi Lauper herself, being like, I really wanted to do this. And I was like, all right, you got me, Cyndi, you've got me. You're just in my arm. No, but I flew to see the show. I flew to New York to see the show. And I remember just being blown away. I thought the show itself was amazing. The message behind it is also incredible. And yeah, I went and did it. I made so many friends doing it. I lived in New York for about 3 months while I was doing it. I did a month of rehearsals and then 2 months of the actual show. So yeah, it was incredible. I loved every second of it. I don't know whether I'd do it again though. I feel like it was hard. It was like really, really difficult. It kind of became like my life. Like there wasn't really much time for anything else. I consider myself, I feel like I've got quite a fragile voice. I don't really feel like I've got the strongest of like, I don't feel like my, what's the word, my vocal stamina is that strong. So I feel like I kept losing my voice. And if I, you know, if I was like, okay, well, I'm going to now, like, you know, during the day, I'm going to record a song for myself. I wasn't able to do it. It was kind of one or the other. So I think I enjoyed the kind of short stint that I did it for. And maybe if I was ever to do a show again, it would probably have to be a short stint once again, because it really, for me personally, it took me away from kind of everything else. So
Right. Yeah. So if the Kinky Boots production goes to London, you know, you might be on the West End, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like 100%. I hope they would consider me if they ever did that.
Yeah, of course. Connor Maynard is not only, you know, a singer, as I mentioned, he's an actor. Do you want to do more acting as well? I mean,
100%. Acting is actually kind of what I grew up wanting to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was kind of from, I think around like age 7, I think my mum put me into like this kind of drama school part time. I'd go on Saturdays. I think she really realized at a really like young age that I was kind of a weird kid. I think she kind of like, I remember like she used to say a story that whenever we used to go to like the doctors or something, and like where most kids in like the kind of the doctor's waiting room would kind of like hold onto their parents' legs, like, oh my God, like so shy and so quiet. I would kind of go into like my own like world, like zone, and stand in the middle of the waiting room and just sing like any song. I think the main song she had was like the Barney theme song, the Barney the Dinosaurs like theme song. And I used to apparently sing that like on top of my lungs, as if I was kind of in my own world. But I think she kind of realized, like, yeah, this kid's kind of messed up, but I think, you know, maybe we can utilize this to our advantage. So yeah,
that was like an episode of Mr. Bean, is what it sounds.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Connor Maynard is our guest. Now, you just said you have a fragile voice. So someone with a fragile voice to take on a song like "I Want to Dance with Somebody" and that's not a fragile voice song. That's
it really
a big voice song.
It is. I went through weeks of training. No, Jack, I didn't really. But with that song, it's an idea that I had for years. Really, it's a song that I kind of always wanted to kind of twist and kind of do my own way. I remember always thinking of the lyrics of the song. If kind of restructured, I basically kept the chorus and I restructured the verses and everything around it. I kind of felt like the chorus, if done in a kind of a certain way, could really lend itself to kind of a more like sad, kind of somber type of song. And a lot of my music is kind of in that kind of like sad kind of like world. I don't really know why. Maybe I need to look at why I'm so sad all the time. But I definitely like kind of doing music like that. I like doing music that can kind of relate to a lot of people and music that can maybe make people feel better in a sad moment. And I just had the idea of kind of twisting the song to kind of make it a little bit more of like, have a bit more of a sad kind of edge. And I think that, I've always kind of loved the song. I think Whitney also is just one of the greatest vocalists to have ever kind of lived. So, hopefully people feel like I've done it justice in my own way. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. It is a gutsy thing to take on such an iconic song. And
it really is.
An artist like Whitney Houston, a female song and a male singing it, and it's such a mega song. I mean,
I think what's also kind of made like myself and kind of my team around me feel that maybe this was kind of meant to be was the song was actually meant to come out a few weeks back. It's meant to come out in January, and there was a few like mishaps with the mix and stuff, and a few things went wrong, and it kind of had to be pushed back. And then we kind of agreed, cool, February 11th, let's put it out on that date, because that was the date that kind of the earliest we possibly could, considering everything else having to get done. And then literally last week, I got a phone call from my manager saying, do you realize that February 11th is 10 years to the day since Whitney Houston's passing? And I was like, there's no way. And then I looked it up and sure enough, literally February 11th, 2012, is the day she passed. And in that moment, I was mind blown. I was like, there's no way that's happened. And then, I don't know, it kind of, for me, gave me a bit of like an eerie feeling of like, well, maybe this is meant to be. Maybe this song is meant to come out around this time.
There's a connection, so you know.
I know, exactly. I'm really, really excited for people to hear it, and I really, really hope that people enjoy it. So, yeah.
Is it part of an album that you have planned, or... Because you've had two albums out now, and I think now you're independent, which gives you more control over your own music and your own direction. You can work at your own pace and your own terms. But is this an EP, an album, or are you just doing singles these days?
At the moment, it's major singles. But an album is definitely the aim. I think that, as you said, it's kind of my first kind of project as an independent artist, and I think that for me, I'm kind of like learning, and I'm kind of seeing how it goes, and I think right now the aim is mainly singles, as I kind of try and find my feet and see exactly what people want to hear from kind of the, you know, Connor Maynard 2022 type thing. Because obviously I got used to releasing kind of from 2012 onwards, and then since then I've become independent, and it's kind of a whole new territory for me. So I think that an album is definitely the final goal, and I think I'm looking forward to kind of putting all these songs out that I've already put out and putting them together in one body of work. I think it's going to end up being one of the situations where I've released the entire album before it's out, and then it will just come kind of back as an album. And I'm like, we've already heard all these songs. So I've got to make sure that I have a bunch of stuff that people haven't heard yet if I'm going to release an album. So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting, because I don't meet a lot of people that kind of launch their careers through social media. And you did. Mm-hmm. You and the whole family, I guess you have a sister and a brother, and they're also YouTubers. Yeah. You know, and you've got huge mega millions and millions, tens of millions of followers on YouTube, mm-hmm. and your videos and streams. And so social media has been good to you.
Social media has basically been like my number one tool in kind of building my career. I think that, you know, I started on social media kind of before it was a thing to really do social media. I think when I first started releasing videos, I don't think Twitter existed. I don't think Instagram existed. Obviously, TikTok definitely didn't exist. So there were like, it was basically just YouTube. And originally, it wasn't even to build any sort of fan base. It was just so that I could allow people who knew I could sing to like hear me sing without me having to send it directly to each person one by one. Because back then it was like, I think it was like dial-up internet. So it was like, so it was super slow. I think it would take like an hour to send one MP3. So obviously it was a much easier way for me to kind of allow people to hear my music. And then it just started attracting obviously people that I didn't know. And it kind of all took off from there. So it was kind of a cool, like organic way. Kind of, I've always liked the kind of way that began because it felt like there was no pressure. It wasn't like I wanted it. It wasn't like I was like, oh, come on, please be the video to kind of like change my life type thing. It was just fun. I enjoyed it. And then all of a sudden it happened. And I really consider myself lucky that I did it back then because I feel like it's so much harder now. I feel for the people trying to come up through social media now because there's so many people doing it. It's such a known way. It's such a known platform of building your career. So, you know, everyone's kind of trying to do it. So I think that... Right. I consider myself lucky that I kind of did it when no one really knew kind of the power of it at the time. So yeah.
Is that how Neo found you? Is it through the social media?
Yeah, exactly. He saw, I did a cover of his song, Beautiful Monster, and he saw that, which is hilarious because it means he was definitely searching for himself at the time. So yeah, he saw that video and yeah, he reached out to me. And at first I was like, there's no way this is real. I was like, I remember he asked me to do a Skype call and he was like, oh, it was his team. They were like, oh, we're gonna set you up on Skype with Neo. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I kind of made sure that I was very dressed down. I was like, I don't wanna look like I'm expecting too much in case it's my mates. Like, hey, we got you type of thing. Like, we were never Neo, it's Neil from down the road type of thing. Like, I was like, I don't wanna get tricked. So I remember I was wearing like this really like scraggly hoodie. It was like 1 a.m. UK time. And then sure enough, it literally is Neo sat on the other side. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I should have worn a suit. Like, what am I doing? Like, I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh no. But it ended up working anyway. We ended up working together and we made a single together that did super well. So yeah, it ended up working out.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, you get, I think you're not real thrilled at the fact that people compare you to Justin Bieber, but you get that all the time where people say, yeah. British Justin Bieber, or you're like Justin Bieber, or you are the next Justin Bieber. And you know, you're the first and only Connor Maynard. That's what you are.
Well, thank you very much. I think when I was kind of, I remember when I was like, I think I was like 17 or I was 17 when I got signed, and around the time I was 17 or 18, I remember being very kind of clear with like my management and my label. I was like, you know, I want to make sure that people don't compare me to Justin Bieber. I want to be my own artist. I don't want people to think that I'm trying to copy him or anything like that, because that's not really what I want. I respect he's done really well, but like, I kind of want to be my own thing. And obviously then I remember like my first piece of press went out. I was about 17 years old, and it literally said the British Justin Bieber. And at first I was mortified. I was like, that's not what I wanted. I was so clear. But then I look back and I think, you know, now 10 years on, I look back at that and I think, well, realistically, like, it probably helped me out massively because he was such a huge name, and people would have gone, well, hold on, you know, Justin Bieber is already huge. Like, who is the British version of him? Let me look into this. If people have just said my name, people would be like, well, who's that? They maybe wouldn't have looked into it as much. And I think that it definitely kind of gave me a leg up. And I think that for me now, looking back, even though I was so against it, I now see it as just kind of, it's flattering, really. I think that, you know, he's such a successful artist, and I actually had the pleasure of meeting him a few years back, and he was genuinely such a nice guy to me, and he was super cool, and he was aware of everything I was doing, and he was super, he gave advice and stuff, and it was really, really cool. So I think that now it's kind of just, it's flattering, but obviously at the same time, obviously trying to kind of cement myself and have my own kind of a brand / sound. So, you know.
No, you got something he doesn't have, and it's a book. You wrote a book called Takeoff.
That is true. Although I feel like he probably does have a book out somewhere, maybe not, but I think I released a book. It's really funny. I thought you were going to say a British accent. And I was like, listen, in America, that goes super far. Like, the amount of times I've utilized my accent to get out of sticky situations, I always feel like the British, people instantly think, oh, you're British? Oh, you're good then. Like, I think, like, there's no way you would do anything, but I'm like, yeah, no, of course, I'm British.
I had to learn a whole new language when I lived in Hong Kong back, 15, 20 years ago. It was British controlled territory at that time.
Yeah.
Boot, lift, cue. Exactly. I mean, these are words we don't use in America. Aluminium instead of aluminum.
But you got to remember, you guys are the ones that got rid of all of it and changed it all. So like, you've only got yourself to blame, really. You would have had all these weird words if you just kept them.
We can't even figure out metrics, you know. We tried to adopt to the rest of the world, but we stuck with our own.
To be fair, I ended up living over there for such an amount of time. I got used to even using so many of your guys' measurements and stuff. So I just kept with it in the end. So yeah.
Mm. So everybody in the family's musical.
Pretty much, yeah. Me and my brother. My brother's more on the parody kind of side. We did some parody music stuff. My sister really enjoys singing, and she's now releasing more and more music, which is really cool. It kind of stemmed from our parents. When my dad was younger, he did a lot of kind of musical theater type stuff. But never since we were born, he actually stopped when he was quite a young child, really. And then my mum, on her side, her father. So my grandfather on my mother's side, he was a performer all of his life. And so there was kind of obviously performing arts background there. But it was funny because not necessarily directly from my parents while we were growing up. My dad's a builder and my mum works in an office. So we didn't get it kind of directly, but it kind of stemmed through the past, I guess. So, yeah.
So when do you think you might have a new album out if you're going to put out an album? You think it'll be this next year?
I hope so. I mean, I'm meant to be. I think as of right now, I'm going on tour at the end of this year. Fingers crossed, everything COVID-wise holds up, and we carry on moving forward. So I'm meant to be going on tour later this year, and I guess I could try and get the album in before then. I hope that I can, and if not, then it will definitely come out as soon as I possibly can, which hopefully is within the next year. So yeah.
Now, you have been very open about mental health struggles, mental health issues. And so, I mean, how is that all going? How are you doing? How are you feeling?
It's good. I think that, you know, like I kind of started battling kind of mental health issues from like 23, I would say around 23. And I feel like when you kind of find yourself in it, you're kind of constantly learning and constantly, you know, I think one of the main things I've learned is that every time you kind of feel you're in like a moment of like real crisis, or like when you're kind of feeling your lowest, you have to remind yourself that it's not forever. It's not permanent. And I think that's kind of my main tool is kind of just trying to really remind myself that it doesn't last forever. And I've also altered loads of things, but I don't drink anymore. I used to drink kind of casually, and I don't at all now. I haven't had a drop of alcohol in the last like 5 months. So that's been really, really cool. It's been a huge shift for my life, and I can't even begin to describe how much it's changed everything for me, like how much better I feel because of it. So I would kind of advise people to do that if they feel like they are struggling with their mental health. I feel like it was such a useful thing for me to have discovered that it really does kind of make such a difference. Obviously people always say, oh, you know, you should try it, but like, I don't really think I realized the magnitude of how much it was gonna kind of change my kind of general mental health. So that was a really cool thing. And just kind of like trying to really focus on work and stuff has helped me a lot. So trying to focus on having like a schedule, trying to give myself goals and stuff really helps. It's annoying really, because it's kind of all the things that you hear anyway. And when you're kind of, you know, stuck in it, you kind of think, oh, well, I can't do that. I can't do any of that. And it's really difficult to remind yourself that yes, you can. And you kind of just have to power through. But those are the things that I've kind of done.
Well, that's great. I mean, you're using your platform, your fame, in a very good way. You know, you're helping people who might be experiencing similar, you know, challenges. And yes. I mean, how did you get yourself out of that dark spot? I mean, just what advice would you give?
As I said, just kind of really focusing on reminding yourself that it isn't permanent, and that you will get through it, and that there will be kind of brighter days, and there will be better moments, and you know, it's kind of just got to take it as it comes, and it just fluctuates. And you kind of enjoy the moments that are great, and remember that those great moments are still to come when you're not feeling great. And as I said, for me personally, eliminating alcohol from my life was was uh, was super helpful. Obviously, it's always going to be different with different people. I think that, you know, that's one thing I had to kind of remember and take note of, was that any advice you hear from people isn't always necessarily going to work for you. It's kind of finding the most useful tools and just trying as many things as you can and remembering the ones that work for you. I promise it gets better. That's it, really. So, yeah.
Well, you know, we're happy to have you on the program. You know, and you're certainly one of the bright stars in the music business. You had a number one album, you know, early on, Contrast. And you've worked with some other pretty well-known artists. I mean, I envy you, and maybe one day I'll be in the same room as Rita Ora.
But, yeah, she's great. Rita's great. Now you need to try and make that happen.
Yeah, and Pharrell, and the list goes on and on and on.
Yep.
Is there a wish list of collaborations you'd like to have? I mean, who would you like to collaborate with?
People I would love to work with. I mean, I'm a huge Post Malone fan. I love Post Malone. I think his music is amazing. I'd love to work with him. Drake has been one of the artists I would have loved to work with ever since the beginning of my career. I've always kind of consistently said Drake, so I'm still holding out. Hopefully that happens one day. Billie Eilish, I think she's amazing. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I would say they're my top three for now, and then I'll let you know if it changes.
So there's the singing, there's the songwriting, and then there's the touring and performing. What's your favorite part of this business?
I don't know. I think I like going through each phase. I think each phase is kind of lifted up by the other one. You know, you go into that studio mode and you're kind of writing and then you're obviously performing it, and then like in the studio, and then obviously you move on to the kind of touring and that kind of thing. And I think that each time you reach the end of each one, you're ready for the next one. So like when you finish touring, you're like, cool, I'm ready to get back in the studio, work on new stuff. And once you've been in the studio for a certain amount of time, you're like, right, I'm ready to go out there and show everyone and perform it. So I think that each one leads nicely into the next one. If I'd have to say what I prefer, I would say probably the studio. I like being in the studio and recording and creating new ideas and creating new things. I think touring is amazing, but it is really taxing. It's like really kind of like, I don't think I've ever gone on tour once without getting sick at least once, like kind of halfway through the tour. So I think that touring is really difficult, but I still love it. I still love doing it. It's just, I would say I find it a lot harder than in the studio. So I'd say that the studio is more enjoyable for me.
Nothing's more rewarding than being on a stage in a country that doesn't speak English and they know all the words to your songs.
That is a crazy feeling. However, it's always hilarious that when you get in between songs and you start saying things and they're like they're just all really awkwardly saying, they're like and then you crack a joke and you just get absolutely nothing from the audience. Like, oh, maybe I need to kind of rattle through these songs and get it over with. So
yeah, favorite places you like to go, favorite places you like to play?
I think one of my favorite shows of all time was in Rome, in Italy. The reason being is the audience essentially brought their own pyrotechnics. They had these like twisty like firework things that they set off like in the middle of the final song. I think it was Turnaround, the song I did with Neo, that was at the end of the set around that time. And like, I remember I was just performing the song as usual, and then all of a sudden these kind of like confetti cannon things start going off in the audience, and I was like, what the hell? And it turned out that the fans had kind of organized it themselves and handed them out, and it was such like, it was almost like a show for me. I was like, wow, like I remember like thinking this is crazy, and that has kind of cemented itself in my memory, that show. I remember, I always think about that show as one of
what do your fans call themselves?
Well, I haven't really used the name in years, because I feel like the kind of fan base name thing is I don't really feel people use it as much anymore, but they were called the Maniacs. And they probably, I mean, they still are. I think they still call themselves the Maniacs.
That works.
M-A-Y, Maynard, Maniacs. So,
that's great. So where can people go to find your tour schedule and all about you? I mean, you have your website, your social media site.
I haven't put it out just yet. So it's coming very, very soon. The announcement of the dates and the look and the, you know, the cities I'm going to be going to will all be announced very, very soon. So hopefully they can be patient and know that it's definitely coming soon. So yeah.
And what's the website?
It would just be on all my socials, really. It would just be on my Instagram page, which is Conor Maynard. It's just all, everything is my name. So my YouTube channel, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, it's all just my name. So yeah.
And his name is Connor Maynard, if you're just tuning in right now. And he's got a new track out, which is his, I guess, sadder version of I Want to Dance with Somebody, which is kind of an interesting twist to a song that we all get familiar with and linked to Whitney Houston. You know, it was an upbeat, happy tempo song, and you turned it around into something very different. You made it your own.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's wonderful. So it's great to talk to you. It's great to see you, you know, to have you on the program. And before we go, we are talking to, you know, millions of people in 100 different countries around the world. We also have the troops tuned in as well. Is there anything you'd like to say to the audience?
Yeah, I think that, I think especially to the American audience, you know, I lived in the States for a decent part of my life. And I think that kind of the American listeners and the American fan base have always been so, so supportive of me. And you know, just honestly, of all the places I've ever visited, I feel like America often feels like my second home. It feels like it's the only other country that I could have ever lived in. Obviously, I did. And I think that I just want to say thank you for always being so welcoming to me and always so warm to me. And, you know, I can't wait to get back over there as soon as I possibly can. So, yeah.
And the rest of the world loves Connor Maynard, and you're going to be going, is a world tour when you do go out on the road?
It will be a world tour, yes. It will be a world tour.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, tremendously talented guy, and I really appreciate you giving us some time, you know, and congratulations on all the success and with the new single as well. So congratulations to Connor Maynard. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Connor Maynard's been our guest. I'm Larry London, and this is Border Crossings on VOA TV.